Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man. A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Madmans and talk about it. Oh, thank you so much for listening to another killer episode of your favorite show that's impossible to find on the internet.
Oh, we got Max Headroom joining us today.
Yeah, you know, I'm just trying to add a little bit of like glitch flair to this podcast. Give us 5 stars in a review. Help other people find it, because this show is actually called Pod Yourself, a Rewatch Podcast. I actually believe it's Pod Yourself a Gun, a Rewatch Podcast,
Sub-season Mad Yourself a Man.
Yeah, sub-season Mad Yourself a Man. Listen, not the easiest podcast to find, so the one way you can help people find it is to give it 5 stars and review on all the local podcasts.
I mean, we're like a speakeasy in the side streets of New
York. That.
Like, if you can find it, you're pretty cool. And
exactly.
You shouldn't be here.
We're like when poly people or swingers, I think, which is different than poly, but similar, I think, wear pineapples on their shirts to let people know that
it's upside down pineapples specifically.
I don't know what kind of pineapples, but all I know is it means fuck my wife. Fuck my
it's
wife.
It's actually a picture. Please. It's a pineapple and someone's having sex with the pineapple.
Who is talking? Who is that? Breaking the rules. But I do want to hear more about that. Anyways, give us 5 stars in review and leave comments and all that stuff. I mean, this week we got this great comment from someone who said,
it's Saturday 15. I'm impressed.
Yeah, okay, so I picked out a random clip because I forgot to do this bit.
Yeah, that wasn't great this week.
Lights out at 8:15.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Sure.
5 stars in review. Okay, today we're talking about from season 3 of Mad Men, episode 2, Love Among the Runes, and we have a great...
Whoa. Did you say runes?
You said runes.
Love Among the Runes. Like, you just pronounced half of the words in the title weirdly for no reason.
I was reading them phonetically.
Okay.
And I also called the show Madman. So why don't you leave me alone? You know what I mean? That's right. And our wonderful guest to talk about season 3, episode 2, Love Among the Runes. We have a great, hilarious returning champion. He is a comedian. He has a new comedy album out right now, both on vinyl and digital. It's called Ran Through. Click the link in the description if you would like to purchase it. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, welcome back, Alan Strickland Williams.
Hey, Madmans. Good to be here. Good to see y'all.
Good to see you, too.
Thanks for having me. Always a joy.
Yeah, well, I always love having you on, and as we started talking about the whole swingers thing, I was like, I don't know why I thought, and maybe there's a reason why I thought, but I was like, I bet Alan knows what fruit is on the swingers person's shirt. Is it upside down pineapple?
It's upside down pineapple, yeah. That's what I've heard. I mean, I just know that from like...
Fucking my wife.
Yeah, fucking other men's wives.
Your wife told, yeah, some wives told me that.
You fuck my wife? You fuck my wife? It's like, I've heard about people talk about the pineapples on shirts. It's like, oh, that's a signal. And ever since having a baby, I realized, like, she's got quite a few pineapples on her baby stuff. Mm. You know, it's like she got watermelons, she got different fruits, she got lots of ice cream cone clothing. And now I'm like looking at that pineapple one and I'm like, I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it have to be that?
Fruit has had a pretty bad reputation since the beginning of time, if you really think
true.
About it.
Yes,
yeah,
at the beginning.
Apples,
yeah.
Pineapples.
You can't get your women around fruit. Bad stuff happens.
As soon as
start getting dicked
women,
down
women
by
be
snakes.
Eating, wait, women be eating fruit.
That way, but also though, that is there an Eve connection to the pineapple thing? Because it's like, if you think about it, like the Lucifer, the snake, was like the first guy who was ever like trying to get someone to cheat.
Mm.
You know,
plus it's a pineapple, you know, it's right there.
No, I got that.
But he's also, Lucifer is also like the first like Costco sample person too.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Just try it.
I would love it if Satan hit himself as a Costco employee.
Just try it.
It's just like, try it. It's oatmeal.
It was the fruit of knowledge all along.
Yeah. Now you are punished by being kicked out of every Costco. Exiting the Garden of Eden. Alan, do you like Mad Men?
I love Mad Men, guys. I can't even explain to you. You hit me up at the right time because a friend of mine just started watching. And I'm like, God, I love this show so much because, like, she could tell me, like, one little thing that happened. And I'm like, I know exactly what scene that is. Did they say this line already?
Oh, wow.
Blah, blah, blah. Like, so this was really fun to get back into. And it was great because season three specifically, I think, is where the show really, like, and yes. It's good from jump. But I think
season three is
where it just becomes what it is and what we love about it the most. And it... Season three, when I do a rewatch, and I've done, that's the other thing too. I'm like, I've watched this one episode of television. Like, I watched this episode 2 times before the podcast.
Oh, damn.
I watched it, actually 2.5 times, because I started watching it the second time, and I was like, I actually do want to take notes. So then I went back and watched the first time again. I've seen this so many times. It's such a layered show. There's so many things I realized that I didn't realize upon previous watches. But
yeah,
season three, whenever I do a rewatch, I start with season three and then watch all the way through. And then I have like one and two as a little like dessert afterwards.
Yeah, just for funsies.
But great show. Thank you.
Don't you think it would be better if they showed the dicks going in?
Uh-huh. Alan,
your guys don't have the dicks going in.
I need your copy,
dude.
Man.
They gave I got a bad copy,
dude. Grock hooked me up.
Damn it, Tim
Grock. I got Grock on Bad Men.
Grock, can you make them fuck?
Show me John's ham.
Show me John's ham. Oh, I want to see it go in. And Alan, what's your favorite advertisement?
You know what I'm going to say? This is going to be a weird answer, but I saw this ad coming under heat recently.
Oh, no.
I kind of want to defend it. And a little unorthodox, this is an ad that plays in front of a movie.
Okay,
but
okay.
This is the Coca-Cola couple where they – it's like plays right after the Nicole Kidman thing.
Yes.
It's like they have – they're in the concessions and then they're – dancing, then they're driving cars, and then they're back sitting and watching the movie.
This is different than the Nicole Kidman thing, or this is
it's usually right after it.
Oh man,
or maybe right before it, or I can't remember. But it's basically like one of the last things you see after the trailers. And people just I saw on X on Twitter recently, people were just ganging up on it and saying, oh, they were saying we can't have both the Nicole Kidman and that.
Yeah,
I'm saying it's time to collectively let Nicole Kidman go.
Yes,
I'm just.
I agree
she's
completely.
Great. It's not a mark on her character or her body of work.
No, of course not.
It's simply time.
It's time.
You have to understand that if she's not shooting a movie or TV show right now, she will die. She's like a shark.
Yeah. She has to keep going forward.
Other projects, fine. I just mean in this, I don't need to see her at AMC anymore.
Sure.
And I definitely don't need to hear people clap or respond to it in any way.
No, that's bad. That's how you know you live in like a city with like a hipster. I don't have that problem in Fresno, but we also don't have an AMC theater. And I feel like all the complaints about...
What theater do you have? You don't have an AMC?
Regal as our major chain, which is, bar none, probably the worst theater chain ever. They finally stopped doing it, but they had the like movie quotes intro where it's just people quoting random stuff, and like Danny Trejo's there, I think, for some reason. Mm-hmm. That one is awful. Way worse than the Nicole Kidman one. And we have like Regal, one non-Regal theater here that I go to exclusively.
That Regal theater, they only play that movie where the train comes out of the audience in person.
Yeah.
That's the only movie.
We got and a Nickelodeon like, like as a well.
Ball pit for people running away thinking the train's going to hit them. It slows them down like a runaway truck ramp.
Oh, hey. Now I'm just imagining that Don meme where he's pensively watching the movie, smoking a cigarette. It's just the train coming.
It's the train coming at it. He's just pensively smoking, watching the one where the moon all of a sudden gets something in its eye.
Yeah,
that was a crazy one. Oh no, the cowboy's shooting at me. But this isn't a podcast about a cowboy shooting at you. No, this is a Mad Men podcast, and we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
Mad Man. Mad Men. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Blue moon in your eyes. Mad man. Mad man. Mad man. Podcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, welcome to this podcast. We're going to be talking about from season 3, episode 2 of Mad Men. Love among the Rons, and we have...
Is this a bit? What are you doing?
No, you fucked me up.
Okay.
You ruined my life.
Hmm.
You know, I was fine saying it wrong accidentally, and then you made me do it into bit. Vince, what's the synopsis?
I'm so glad you asked, idiot. Don is brought in to save the day for a PR campaign involving the building of a new Madison Square Garden, only to have the rug pulled out from under him. At home, Betty argues with her brother over care for their sick father.
Yes, yes, that is what happens. But what's more important is what is happening at the time that this episode was set in.
That's right. It's a period piece. We need some of that period context. And we like to put some of that back in with a little something that we call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent. That's news, isn't it?
That's right. Today, we're going all the way back to August 23rd, 1963.
What a time.
What a time.
Getting closer and closer to that whole November thing, if you know what I mean.
Exactly 67, I can't do math, years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Headline Washington, from the Miami Herald, X-15 pilot soars to 66 miles. Edwards Air Force Base, pilot Joe Walker, highest and fastest flyer of winged aircraft, broke his own world airplane altitude record Thursday by shooting the rocket ship 66 miles into space. His blazing climb surpassed the world altitude mark he set only a few weeks ago when he gunned the bullet-shaped manned missile 65 miles high.
He's flying into space?
Yeah, he's flying into space.
What do you mean?
The 42-year-old chief space agency flyer, America's number one test pilot, was able to see the curvature of the Earth and the outline of the Pacific coast over a stretch of more than 1,500 miles from Mexico to Canada.
That's not space. That's not space.
Yes.
That's not space.
He's 66 miles up in the air. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but he's not in space. He's still in the sky. Alan, can you... let us know who's right here. Am I right in that plane is not in space, or is Vince right?
65 miles?
Yeah, yeah.
66 miles.
66 miles? I mean, that seems pretty up there.
It's up there, but I mean, unless you are in...
breaking orbit? Is that the question?
I think I believe the question is he on the moon?
He's not on the moon.
It's well, then, he's not in space.
Is this farther than...
A satellite.
Like Elon and Bezos have been? That's kind of what I want to know.
William Shatner. How far did he go? Shatner went up there and he was just like, space is lonely. I thought about my death. I didn't like it. And I was like, yeah, that's why I never wanted to go to space, too.
Yeah, no, space is bad. People forget that about space.
Yeah. Postscript. Walker was killed June 8th, 1966, when his F-104 Starfighter Chase aircraft collided with a North American XB-70 Valkyrie. At the altitude of about 25,000 feet, Walker's Starfighter was one of five aircraft in a tight formation for a General Electric publicity photo when his F-104 drifted into contact with the XB-70's right wingtip. So he died doing advertising.
That's amazing. And he was killed by the right wing. Typical.
Yeah.
Sorry, we get a little
another
bit,
martyr.
We get a little political on this podcast. Yeah.
It's so crazy that all like back then we were just so space race.
Yeah, old,
that it's like what did a man do in a plane today?
Yeah. This
well,
man,
it's weird that we're like
higher and higher.
We got to go to the moon, and we did it in 1969, and then we're like, all right, we're good. We don't have to do any more space stuff from now on.
Well, we did a little more space stuff, and we were like, well, we can't stop flying into space until we kill an elementary school teacher.
Yeah.
And then finally they were able to achieve that with the Columbia. Some say disaster. I say celebration. I say achievement, and then
you mean the Challenger? I mean they both exploded.
Wait, what happened to the Columbia?
That one exploded too, but the Challenger had the first school teacher on board.
Oh, it was the Challenger?
Apollo. Yeah.
Oh, I
read a book about the Challenger like 6 months ago. I should remember this, but
this is crazy. It was a Dodge Challenger.
It was a was a Dodge Challenger.
They shouldn't have let Tyrese Gibson drive that.
Stupid.
I love, dude.
What's the other rapper? Yeah. That's the one I was trying to remember.
It's Ludacris, right?
Ludacris.
That's fun, though.
That's why I stuttered, because I was trying to remember Ludacris.
No, it was fun, though. It was fun. I knew what you meant, because I was like, okay, he's got Fast and Furious Confusion. But
no, Tyrese was in the car. It was just...
Yeah, right.
I think Ludacris was driving. I'm pretty
sure.
I don't remember. Actually. They were both in the car together. Anyway, August 23rd, 1963, another headline. Miner's lifeline misses. A third try at drilling an escape hole for the three trapped miners was ordered Thursday after the second one failed just as it seemed certain to succeed.
Well, certainly fucking, you know, a janitor or a custodian will have the keys.
To the mine? It's a big hole.
Miner. I thought you meant trapped underage children.
All right, Kendrick Lamar.
They're underground. Fun.
Yeah, you are. Undaunted, rescue crews wheeled the giant drilling rig, as tall as a 10-story building, into position for again driving a 12-inch bit toward an underground pocket about 14 feet long and 9 feet wide. I just know he will come out of this alive. Those were the words of Mrs. Anna Fellen, whose husband David, 58, has been trapped under more than 300 feet underground with Henry Throne, 28, and Louis Bova, 42, for 10 days.
Do you have an update on...
I do.
Okay, so just to be clear, wife said, I'll bet you $1 million he lives, or something along those lines, right? She said yes.
She said, I just know he will come out of this alive.
Yeah. Okay.
She was right.
Oh, good wife.
This is about the Shepton mine disaster. Was one of the first rescues of trapped miners accomplished by raising them through holes bored through solid rock, an event that gripped the world's attention during August 1963.
I'm sorry. What is like one of the first rescues of miners? Like, well, usually we just go, well...
I'm sure. They did.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah, they'll run out of oxygen before too long.
Yeah. On the bright side, free grave.
Notoriously progressive employers, the mining companies.
Yeah. Free grave.
Yeah.
The roof of the Shepton anthracite coal mine collapsed August 13 with three miners inside trapped 300 feet below ground. A small borehole was drilled from the surface in an attempt to contact the miners. After several days, a borehole successfully reached a mine and revealed that two of the miners, Henry Throne and David Fellon, had survived in a small, narrow chamber.
Wow.
Rescuers dropped provisions to the miners, and subsequent larger boreholes, Matt's mom's ears are burning,
were made
until the final large hole bored with the, the assistance of billionaire Howard Hughes and the two surviving miners.
Oh, Howard got in there.
Howard Hughes is in the mix.
Yeah. Our billionaire just called one of the guys who drilled the mine a pedophile.
He just called him a pedophile.
This time, he actually helped. Anyway, one of the guys did die. The guy with the ethnic name. Surprise, surprise.
Surprise. It was probably, you know, the two white guys were like, well, he can't live.
There is. Someone did write a song implying that they killed and ate the other one, apparently.
Well, really?
Yeah. In 1971, the Buoys recorded a hit single, Timothy, about three miners trapped underground due to a cave-in, with only two of them surviving, and a strong implication they survived by cannibalizing the third.
Damn, that's crazy. How do you just eat a raw guy?
Well, you have to choke him out first.
All right. Okay. Well, I guess, so that's what the got more news?
Done. No, we got a couple short ones.
Okay.
These will really situate you in time. Will North represent JFK rights push? Republican strategists are beginning to feel that Northern reaction to President Kennedy's position on civil rights may cut deeply into his big city backing in the 1964 election. It's not something we care to discuss publicly, but these strategists said private white resentment against Negro demands for speedy equality on multiple fronts, including housing, may cost Kennedy votes in the areas where they credit him with winning the 1960 election.
I see.
I've never heard that one before, you know? Never heard.
Yeah,
it's
no.
It's going to be a backlash.
Yeah, we can't. We got to be very careful about giving rights.
It's a slippery slope, as Bert Cooper would say.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It is a slippery slope. Read The Fountainhead. Read Atlas Shrugged.
Yep. And finally,
Atlas Hugged.
Yeah, Atlas know what? Why don't we start hugging Atlas? All right, Ayn Rand, you fucking
dry pussy cool anymore. Bitch. Sorry. You know, earnestness is the new punk rock, I think.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
No one ever said that before.
Earnestness goes to jail.
Earnestness goes to CBGBs.
Finally, this is just a short bit about Smiling Beauty is 17-year-old Camille Bonanno of Newark, who was chosen Miss Italian-American from more than 70 contestants in a pageant at Palisades Amusement Park in Cliffside Park, New Jersey.
Miss Italian-American?
Yep, 17-year-old from Newark. Camille Bonanno.
Very specific. Bonanno.
She's a standard model, 36, 23, 36. You know, just got to make sure you measure all the 17-year-olds.
Yeah. That's it's crazy that they did a Miss
Italian. What a dish.
Yeah.
Hubba hubba.
Also, a Bonanno, that's one of the crime families, isn't it?
Of course. Yeah, it is.
It's one of the five. They probably had the fix in.
It's one of the five families. The one of the five boroughs of New York. They're like the five fingers.
Yeah.
The Bronx, Manhattan, Staten Island, Brooklyn, and Queens. And I can close them and they make a fist. What is it that John Travolta says in the Gotti movie?
That's basically what it is. What do you got when you put them together? That's a fist. And what do you got when you got a fist? Something to put in Vince's mom's ass. And what do you got when you got Vince's mom's? A pig. What do you do with a pig? You eat it. All right. Well, so that's
you
what
grease
happened.
It up and wrestle it to the ground.
You make it bore a hole and save some miners. Speaking of miners, my 17-year-old daughter, sexy. So that is the news.
She's got a 36-inch bust. Pretty standard for as far as models go.
Yeah, she got median titties. So we are talking about this episode, and I have a little bit of a Draper D story that I'll play for you, and it won't be much, and I'm just going to find a spot in the middle to play it. So just hear a little bit of it.
Tried to molest me, and now my brother's taking him back to my house to figure shit out. My daddy's back, and he's coming with my brother. Hey, love.
Yeah.
People
blood is buried, but Gene is showing some dementia symptoms.
All right. You can hear the whole song at the end. That is from 1963. And of course, that's why I chose it. And it took a long time to record it. So let's you guys listen to that at the end. But now let's talk about this episode. Vince, general thoughts. Tell me about Love Among the Ruins.
This is a downer-ass episode in which Betty's increasingly senile father becomes a metaphor for mid-century America's increasingly feckless ruling class.
Oh, shit.
Don and Betty see that the masters of the universe they worked so hard to emulate have turned into sad old men, paralleling Don's disillusionment with Roger Sterling, paralleling Peggy's disillusionment with Don, further underpinned with a subplot about tearing down Penn Station in the name of progress. The episode is definitely doing an art. I kind of got caught up in the confusing family dynamics between Betty and her brother and in the downerness of dementia plots in general. I was much more interested in the Madison Square Garden guys and Peggy becoming the throat goat of Brooklyn.
All right. Fair enough. Alan, general thoughts on this episode. Tell me about it. What'd you think?
I took like sort of line by line notes, but I, you know, this to me kind of had the perfect mix of everything. It had the office stuff and the, Austin, whatever you want to say,
yeah,
home life
the
stuff.
Maypole. Oh yeah.
Oh, and then the Maypole. I mean, it was fun to watch Don. Like, this is a great Don episode because he's not completely out of control yet. Like his, he's kind of holding it together this episode.
He's just pissed off the whole time.
He's just mad the whole time, but he's like, and it could have, there's like this one hinge point where like he goes and hangs his coat back down or he just keeps it in the room where if he leaves that room with Betty, he's never coming back in the, for the episode. Yeah. And if he stays, he stays. But, yeah, I was just pretty, and it had, I always like watching these two because it's like, I love Kinsey. Kinsey is such a great character. And it, because, and especially the longer that I work in this, like, you know, it's not exactly what they do, but working in this sort of world, it's like, oh my God, the Kinseys of this world are so funny.
Yeah.
This is also, I'm like a huge Pete fan, and this is a real, like, Pete starting to kind of figure out how things work and lock things together. And just a lot of like, as someone that sees it and know where it's all going to, there's the obvious big nod to like doomed things to come, giving the wedding date for Roger for what's her name. But then there's a lot of just
what was
other
the wedding
stuff
date?
Margaret. Margaret's getting married and she doesn't want Jane to
I thought you meant the actual like date of the day
of
the year.
No, it was the 23rd. It's when it was the JFK assassination.
Okay.
That's right.
So not to ruin a episode, you're going to have a couple.
There's no spoilers on the show because there's no such thing as spoiling a show because the show's been out for 20 years.
JFK got shot?
Yeah.
Is he okay?
But there are just all these little things that it's like, I mean, God, like just Sal and and just seeing the Lane Price of it all and the fact they're still under the British company's mantle. Just so many. Every time I watch this show, I'm just like, and this episode specifically, it's just like, what a layered, dense piece of work.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the Paul Kinsey's and Pete's kind of inherited the world? Like those are the two main types of like management that we have.
In a way, I guess it's like Paul Kinsey though. It's harder to say because of like Paul Kinsey feels like a man before his time, a type of guy. Mm. I mean, I'm sure he's a 60s guy. That's like, this is the archetype of a whiny 60s guy who's living with this like, oh, I'm starting to develop these sort of like grand principles, but I also I really like job.
I feel like the Paul Kinseys of the world became middle managers, and then sure. the Pete's like, you have your Elons and Bezoses who are basically Pete, where they're like not cool and they will never stop punishing the world for not admitting that they're cool. Yeah. And then you have your like middle management types like Kinsey, who sort of they have principles or claim to, but then as soon as push comes to shove, it's like, no, I will lick the boot if it means
yes.
paycheck. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And it's just Kinsey just doesn't like. There's that just one exchange where Pete says, like, "Do you even listen to yourself?" It's like, he just doesn't get what he does and how it all works. And there's some of that with Peggy too. I mean, Don and Peggy have that convo later, but yeah,
I feel like Paul is in a lot of ways similar to Pete in that they both kind of look at Don and idolize his abilities but do not understand how to emulate them. Mm-hmm. And like Pete almost doesn't even try. He like in a way understands that like what his skill set is being a blue blood, you know.
Yeah.
like he understands that what he brings to the table is like, you know, I know you're comfortable working with a white man, you know, like a WASP who has family connections or whatever. Whereas Paul looks at like Don and thinks he can do what Don does, but he doesn't know what Don does. And so his attempts at trying it, like the scene with Madison Square Garden is like genius because he is clearly in his feelings about working with these guys who are trying to destroy New York. In his mind.
Well, they both make the mistake of thinking that Don's persona is him being comfortable with himself and not just an act that he does.
Right. Yes. It's like when people attempt to do stand-up because they watched like Louis C.K. when there was like, you know, in like the early, in like the 2011s, right, or the 2010s, people would watch Louis and they'd be like, oh, I see what stand-up is. It's when you're just talking. And they wouldn't understand the like, no, he's like, those are all written jokes. You just can't tell. Like, they don't see the act. And then, of course, Louis would later go on to masturbate in front of people. But this is a point from before then. Don't masturbate in front of people. Point being that, like, they see Don.
Unless they force you to at gunpoint.
Right, exactly. And then you have to. And that's why I smoked crack, because someone put a gun in my head.
They kill my family.
Yeah. So, I feel like they see Don and they instead of understanding what he's doing, they're falling for his act in the same way that the client does.
They think that he's expressing some inner conviction.
Right.
And like appealing to some higher principle and not just being the embodiment of whatever the client wants to hear.
Right. He's a human stem cell. And he understands how to like manipulate people by, you know, he can be next to anyone and immediately kind of like be like, hey, you've known me your whole life. That's the whole thing.
Well, it's kind of funny, too, because like Don and Kinsey, like they start like at the same point, basically, with like when they're talking to the guy. Well, he was in more of the formal office thing, but it's just like where they wind up. It's like, okay, that's why Don's Don, and that's why
It's like Kinsey starts off trying to nag a girl because he saw Don do it,
right?
But instead of it working, he just starts crying and calling her a bitch.
Yeah, exactly.
This is why you won't sleep with me, you stupid bitch.
So I have the Pete and Paul scene.
Before we get to that, can we talk about the very first scene? It opens, and I've seen this episode two or three times now, and every time, I still haven't done it, every time I see this episode, it makes me want to go back and watch the movie Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, in my head, I'm like, there's no way this movie can be as terrible as what this scene looks like, right?
Yes.
Because, like, as far as I can tell, Bye Bye Birdie was a movie that you went to because you were really fucking horny and you might see like Anne Margaret's like nipples through a shirt.
Sure.
And otherwise seems to have no redeeming qualities. It's just one of those like
one of the 60s
pop culture that is so aggressively corny and does not translate.
It's just one of those classic like this is back in the day where, I mean, we've always been recycling IP. It was just that was a huge Broadway hit. So it's like, all right, let's put it on the movies.
Right, right. The weird thing about Bye Bye Birdie to me has always been that the music is terrible. It's like, and I am not like by any stretch, like, a huge musical theater fan. I wouldn't say that, but I
Seen your work.
No, listen. I actually have seen a lot of musical theater and do enjoy quite a lot of it compared to, like, you know, let's say Vince,
someone who's not Jewish,
right? Exactly. Well, it's like, I mean, all Jews are born with extra bone in our body that really loves when people sing, and we can jump really high and do our taxes good. But it's just a bad musical. Like, the music is horrible.
That's what I was getting from the scene. I was like, what is this song?
Yeah, well, and it's weird watching a room full of people enjoy it. And I credit to the acting in this. When they play the opening scene first at the beginning, of the show, they play the opening scene to Bye Bye Birdie, and everyone's watching it and like taking it in. And then there's a scene where Don is watching it as well, and he has like feelings about it. And and it's just one of those things where it's like, you got to give credit, because I'm watching it going like, how do you not watch this and go, oh my God, this sucks.
I think, but I think that's what Peggy is there for. It's kind of there to show you that, yes, you it had to corny. Be dangerously horny. Otherwise, you would not have appreciated this. And if you're Peggy. If you're Peggy, she's just like, yeah, it's like a 25-year-old woman acting 14. It's very strange.
Yeah.
I think the big problem with it is the title. I don't think it should be called Bye Bye Birdie. I think it should be called Hello, Anne Margaret.
Yeah. Hubba, hubba, hubba.
Hello, boobies.
Hello, and hello, God. It's me, Anne Margaret. There's something there. So
that cut when it goes to Don and he's crying watching it later in the show, that made me laugh. Big, huge, every time I watch it.
Yeah, it's so funny. That opening scene is great. And we'll start there because it's where the show starts. As soon as it's done, my favorite part is you hear Sal go, aw. Because Sal wants to keep watching it. And so we find out that there's this pitch that they're all getting ready for. Pepsi wants this scene frame for frame for a commercial for their new ladies weight loss drink. It's a diet soda called Patio. They're all talking about it, and one of like the major themes of the like Betty arc in this is she's doing the thing where she is annoyed that products that are marketed for women are like almost geared towards men in some way.
I think what it comes down to is that she is still laboring under the delusion that an advertising pitch is meant for the customer and not for the client.
Yeah, totally. And they have this really it's a great scene where immediately Harry Crane, who is now, you know, just immediately starting in season three, he is like full-on gross boy. Mm-hmm. He wants to go to the casting, and you know,
he's another Elon type, you know. He rose to the top and immediately it was like, you know, had this false sense of cool.
Yes. And I have that scene. I loved it.
I understand why. You like this, but it's not for you. I'm the one who'd be buying Patio.
You're not fat anymore.
Thank you. Is it just a knockoff? Are we allowed to make fun of it at least?
She's fun and sexy. Don't be a prude.
Would you say that to me?
It's sexy, and it's what they want.
Can you explain to me, would you say that to me? Like, I rewound it four times. I still don't know what she's talking about.
It's got to be the first part.
Right,
so she's sexy and young.
She's young, fun and sexy, full of cum, whatever. And then,
what does that mean? Would you say that to me? He just did say that to her.
I think,
don't get it. Would you say that about me?
I think it's say that about me, basically.
Would you say that about me? Am I those things?
Because she's putting herself in the in the customer's.
That makes sense. But if she would have just changed the word to about, I would have known what the fuck she was talking about.
Well, she's a dizzy dame.
Yeah, exactly. And it kind of falls
probably
in
a period.
Yeah, right. It falls in with the theme that Peggy is dealing with throughout, which is like she feels disconnected from the youth because she is young, mm-hmm. and yet she feels old. She feels like she's not a part of this like young girl culture. Like
she's not like other girls.
She's not like other girls.
She Millie Bobby Browned herself.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean, but yeah,
she's texting Drake.
Yeah, she was texting Drake too much.
No, I just saw a picture of her today, and she's like 21, but she somehow looks like a 37-year-old woman.
Oh, well, maybe.
Not because she's like, bad looking or whatever. It's all like styling choices.
Sure, sure. I think it's like with Peggy, she's grown up a lot, and she's carrying a lot of like baggage. So like for her, she doesn't have a carefree young feeling to her. And mm-hmm. so she's like spends this episode kind of, feeling resentment and, a kind of covetous of the way that people are able to kind of use their sexuality. And it's not something she has fully really done yet. So I think part of this was just her looking at Anne Margaret, acting 14 and being and kind of
is
like,
this what you want?
Yeah, being mad, like so this is what guys want? Some girl who's never had an abortion, some girl who's never had to give up their child. Like for her, this is she feels
she's trapped between. She can't be in the boys' club of the other copywriters, and
right.
she can't really be like the girl that
a
they
girly
sleep
girl.
With either.
Yeah, not without like being a secretary, So she's stuck.
Yeah, she had to turn into a boy in order to, she had to get them to treat her like a man in order to get her job that she
right.
has, basically.
And now she's treated like a man, but not really. She's treated like a girl, an outsider, an interloper. Yes. And
well, what you don't hear on that clip, though, is Sal's look after you're not fat anymore.
Yeah.
He has such a look of like, he's like registering it.
Yeah.
And then what I also love after that, what Peggy says is clients don't always know what's best.
Yeah.
And that is like, that is the nicest version of that sentiment I've ever heard working in.
Right. Yeah. And. It's true. I mean, clients are fucking idiots. And you see in the show countless examples of that. Clients truly not knowing, like going to pay, thousands of dollars for experts' opinions on this and yet ignoring that advice and being like, well, here's my idea. It's like, well, you don't have an idea. That's why you're paying money for it.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before, but I watched that. There was like a brief reality show called The Pitch, where it was like two ad agencies putting together a pitch for a product. And I think I watched like three episodes of it. And then I stopped after I realized that the client picks like by far the worst pitch every single time.
Yeah. And you just go crazy. And it's funny because like Peggy is like, she's right about a lot of the things that she is saying, save for the stuff about like not understanding how advertising works. But like things like, guys, this product it's never gonna work out. It's called Patio. It's a shitty name.
And then Don's like, yeah, but they're stupid and we take their money. Like, that's
right,
job.
Exactly. You're forgetting what
I like
is.
The way he says that, which is that like, leave some tools in your toolbox. Like,
yeah,
this doesn't need to be good.
Yeah. And that is a really great scene in which Don kind of just tells her like how it is. It's really mm-hmm. great. Here it
I'm
is.
Young and excited and desperate for a man.
I don't mind fantasies, but shouldn't it be a female one?
Peggy, I know you understand how this works. Men want her, women want to be her.
Even if that's true.
It is. Sorry if that makes you uncomfortable.
Well, if we were making a movie or a play, we'd be embarrassed to do this. It's phony.
You're not an artist, Peggy. You solve problems. Leave some tools in your toolbox.
I think this is also Matthew Weiner's his Sopranos lineage is showing here, because mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of the third season is like a corrective, just in case that you thought Don Draper was actually like super cool admin guy. Like, we're gonna remind you every so often that like the ad business does not run on genius. It doesn't, you know, you're not making actual magic. You were just babysitting a client.
Yes.
Oh yeah. I mean, and when Don reveals his most true self, you know, later on, it's like the worst thing he ever did in the office.
Yeah.
You know, so and he fucked everybody. But oh fuck, I was gonna say something, but I can't remember. Anyway.
I mean, like, he is telling her something that I think a lot of people, you know, with jobs in the creative industries, it's always like you're always looking for like, well, what's something that is like partially creative that also pays, you know, so that I'm not like just doing data entry and what, like, you know, I want a creative job. And he is kind of like taking, I don't know, he's making her see the reality of the situation, where because she's like, well, if this were a play, and he's like, it's not a play, it's a fucking, yeah. We're writing a pitch for an ad for a product that we know is not going to work out, but we hope to manipulate them just enough for them to give us money in order to fail. Like,
and it's all in service of getting Pepsi. Like, they right. even have it. They even yeah. have a sort of what you would call nefarious or ulterior, I guess, motive. Yeah.
Yes.
But in that moment, that is interesting. It's like Don is that, you know, he wildly vacillates with Peggy between being a truly like benevolent mentor mm-hmm. and like literally plucked her up and out. Like, you know, that's amazing. And then this is more of a like, he's not being, then he'll be like a total jerk, like a mean and yes. not constructive or anything. This is like pretty squarely in the middle of like mm-hmm. harsh truth delivered in a pretty like all right way. And it seemed like she absorbed it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
She says her boss is a jerk. I guess she actually did absorb it, but she has a brief pushback where she like, she says he's a jerk, but you know, deep down she knows that he's kind of right. Just a trivia note. Do you guys want to know the flavors of Patio? The actual.
Oh my God! Yes,
it's like an orange one, right?
So Patio came out in 1963, just like they show. That became Diet Pepsi in 1964. The variants were root beer, orange, imitation grape, imitation strawberry. I like that nobody feels the need to say imitation anymore.
Yeah. Wait. Well, why imitation those, but orange? Nah, not imitation. Yeah. Real yeah, orange.
Orange. Yeah, that is interesting. Mm-hmm. Dry ginger ale, dry club soda, dry tonic water, diet cola, and red cherry.
Oh, I mean, all those flavors are bomb. So
it is interesting that red cherry and orange get the genuine treatment, but grape and strawberry. I guess people were too familiar with grapes and strawberries.
It's weird now that the only time you do hear imitation is with crab.
Yeah, that's it.
The only time you hear it.
Yeah, that is weird. I mean, yeah, I guess because now if it's not imitation cheese, it's vegan cheese, you know?
Mm-hmm. Matthew Weiner should write a show about that.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, we could call it Sad Men because we want our cheese.
I would love to see like crab. A modern update of Mad Men that explains how we got an actual Malk. Have you guys seen Malk in the store?
The fuck is Malk?
It's like a oat milk or something like that. It's like it's a non-dairy milk. And okay. I'm pretty sure they took it straight from that Simpsons episode.
Oh my God. They actually called it Malk?
Yeah, they called it Malk.
Good for them.
Yeah. You know? Interesting.
They understand that kids these days like the Simpsons. Oh shit. Fuck. Hey, Brent.
Hey, it's me, one of those kids who loves the Simpsons.
Hey, cool.
Hey, I think
we're
not kids
anymore, guys.
I am.
Speak for yourself. I'm so young.
Yeah.
And that's why I love ads. I'm very impressionable. And that's why I'm breaking in here to insist that we play some ads.
All right. You heard the man. Ay, caramba. It's time for us to eat our shorts, man, and listen to some ads. I can't think of another Simpsons.
Underachiever and proud of it.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, mm-hmm. We'll be right back.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only. Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
And we're back. It's Mad Yourself a Man here with guest Alan Strickland Williams. What's up, dog?
What's up?
What a good ad. Yeah, so Peggy.
One of the best bits in Demolition Man, by the way.
Is that everything's a Taco Bell?
That's great. Everybody acknowledges that.
Okay.
Another great bit is that when you play the oldie station on the radio, it's just old commercial jingles.
Oh, that's hilarious. I don't even remember that. Yeah. I love that.
It's like, yeah, that's like they sing oldies and it's like I'm Oscar Mayer Wiener and stuff.
That's awesome. I feel like that's almost like an Idiocracy bit. It's
Gen X's Idiocracy.
Yeah. I like that.
Because I feel like Gen X's critique of capitalism only went so far as, weren't commercials stupid?
Right. Yeah. They didn't think about the fact that everything was ad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their only problem with capitalism is it was too pushy.
The ads were too infantilized.
It was too in your face.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, if you're going to, you know, manipulate me, at least do it, you know, like
with some ripped jeans on.
With some ripped jeans. But yeah, continuing on with what's happening with Peggy throughout this episode. She's feeling bad that, you know, she is not one of the fun girls. She's watching Joan. At one point, she goes up to, like, Joan in the, like, as they're waiting for the elevator. And I feel like Joan is just not interested in... Like, I think Peggy just wants to talk some shit. Do you guys remember that scene?
Yeah, yeah.
And for some reason, Joan is not giving her the time of day. So then, like, at some point, Peggy sees Joan just, like, talking to a bunch of clients who are there for whatever reason. And she's watching from afar and feeling just, like, kind of jealous at watching her being able to kind of, like, use ditzy sexiness in order to, like, charm them. And mm-hmm. so later you watch her go out, you know, to first you see her in brushing her hair in the mirror and she starts singing the Bye Bye Birdie song. And it's kind of sweet. Like, I forget, you know, like, it's, I don't know, there's something about Peggy's character that you're like, oh, you know, she just feels like she's so hopeless that you just love her, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wrote, I typed out, Peggy was so real for doing this.
Yeah. So my confusion about this part is she goes out, you know,
goes to a bar on a whim,
which is Kohl's, by the way.
I don't know.
That's where it's shot. Kohl's is downtown LA, famous sandwich.
Oh, really?
It's closing next month. Been open for like 108 years. Or something.
Oh, damn. No. Yeah. So she goes.
They didn't film in New York?
No, pretty much all Mad Men is shot in LA.
Oh, damn. That sucks.
That sucks.
Yeah, New York, the water.
I'm walking here. Yeah. The Bodega.
Bagels.
Peggy takes this guy home, this college dumbass.
Yeah.
Takes a bite of his burger, and he's like, wow, this chick fucks. She goes home with him. And so my confusion was, like, we saw Peggy getting on the pill earlier in the show, right? Like what happened between then and now?
You mean why didn't she want to do Raw Doggy?
Why did she give it up for this loser?
Yeah.
It's 1963, dude. This is pre AIDS. I don't think like.
Well, I don't think
that's really what she was looking for when she went out that night. I think maybe it was what she was looking for, but when it came to it, because she clearly was not having a good time, even when she was pretending to have a good time at the bar.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I thought she kind of did do the sex just for.
I think it was to
prove something to herself. And yes, I was curious why she didn't just do the whole thing there. Because I thought her concern was getting pregnant again.
I like that you're mad. You're like, no, I mean, just, she's already on the pill. What the fuck?
I don't know. I mean, she already took this guy home and.
Yeah, well, I'm already here.
Clearly, from the way she's acting the whole episode, she's probably on her period.
Yeah, she's probably on exactly, dude.
No, I mean, because I feel like she's like, we can do other stuff, but I feel like in 1963, that would have been like, oh, you mean other stuff that's like way crazier than having regular sex?
Yeah, what is other stuff in 1963? It's like sucking.
I just think the guy was such a dip. Like,
sure.
Yeah, I think that when he said he didn't have a condom. She called it a Trojan. That she realized
product placement.
Yeah, I think she just didn't want to like.
She's like, do you have a Trojan? He's like, what am I, a sailor?
Yeah. What am I? A Greek.
That dude definitely would have been into AI if he lived now.
100%. He talks about he's like
machines.
He has like robots are going to take our jobs anyways. Might as well build the robots. And I'm just like, you deserve for someone to go back in time and kill you. I think she just wasn't interested in having sex with him, and she did want to, you know, do some stuff.
Taste his cum.
I can't imagine she would do too much hand stuff with him because his hand was filled with burger.
Yeah.
And everything about him says dirty. But I do love that he has the best friends in the world. The wingman shit on was like one of the moments in this episode.
I thought that was like a little on the nose, and it would have scared a girl who wasn't Peggy away. But she was like,
"No,
I am looking for a one night."
Yes,
stand.
That's what Peggy was looking for, so it was perfect. But I have that wingman.
And I work for a jerk.
Where in the world you got cab fare?
What are you talking about? I live around the corner.
Oh, that's right. He does.
I love you, Drew. I love that guy. That's good friends.
Did he swap apartments with one of the friends? Is that what it was?
No, he was.
Saying like you could just go home with this guy. It's right there.
Yeah. Oh, it was getting him to say out loud, "Oh, he lives just around the corner." By the way,
they're setting him up. Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
They're setting him up to get some fucky.
So we can knock down that pussy.
Yeah, yummy, yummy. And so they eat the burger. They ate the burger.
They ate the burger already.
Oh, they ate the hamburger.
Whole burger.
Yeah, give me that Big Mac.
It doesn't get all over the place.
It doesn't belong in your face. Oh, shit, that's an ad.
Fuck you, I'm eating.
Yeah.
I don't actually remember the actual slogan. I remember the Idiocracy.
Don't bother me. I'm eating.
That's it.
Yeah. That was for like
your children are starving.
Yeah, your children. You'll be placed in the custody of Carl's Jr. Carl's Jr. Fuck you. I'm eating. So she gets to have some fun sex, or she basically gets to prove to herself that she is an attractive, carefree girl. And I'm sure that goes great. And then she leaves in the middle of the night because she's like, I've proved it. Bye. Anyways, other things happening. We talked a little bit about what's going on in Madison Square Garden with regards to, Sterling Cooper. They are trying to get this contract to do ads for it. And the scene that we talked about earlier, I have. It's Pete and Paul talking to the Madison Square Garden people, and Paul having no idea how to do a Don Draper. Here it is.
Did Do you know where the greatest Roman ruins are? They're in Greece. Spain. Because the Romans tore theirs all down. They took apart the Colosseum to build their outhouses.
Do you have a problem, buddy?
He's looking for an angle.
Well, I got a mailbox full of death threats from beatniks like him. I'd rather live in a teepee. This is the greatest city in the world. If you don't like it, leave.
I'm going to have to talk to Don about this.
Don't do that. Look, now they'll trust me more when I help them.
Do you ever listen to yourself?
I love it. Now they'll trust me more when I help them. It's so I love Paul because he is clueless as to how he should be. And then you see
again, that is like that is the future middle management. Yeah. Their relation to capitalism is they'll trust me more when I help them.
Yes. And then
it's just so funny that he's a beatnik and really he's J.D. Vance.
Yes.
He has a beard. Okay.
and you see, like, compared to Don, I mean, Don's version of this is Don, and it's so perfect comparatively. And he says a line in here, you know, that I think is so poignant that it's kind of like it's like stuck with me for a long time. It's like, if you don't like what's being said, change the conversation is true. Truer words have never been spoken. So
this is the episode for that.
Here's that scene.
Why do you people insist on making us sound like villains?
Your concern over public opinion shows a guilty conscience. Now what good is that serving you if what is to be done is already underway?
So let's say I don't have a guilty conscience.
Good. And let's also say the change is neither good or bad. It simply is. PR people understand this, but they can never execute it. If you don't like what is being said, change the conversation.
So, look, I don't mean to always bring every conversation back to Israel. But I feel like this conversation is something, I mean, this advice is something that I have seen implemented, or at least attempts to be implemented by like propagandists. It's a thing you see a lot where it's just like, you know, half of the PR people in, you know, Israel or in, you know, any kind of pro-Israel media are like, you know, we need to constantly react to all the war crimes allegations. And the other half is like, no. The guilty conscience does not serve us. Just change the conversation. Remember Hamas. And it's like the same thing here. And he even says, well, like, PR guys understand this, but they don't know how to execute it. And
I also think there's like this reminded me of that press conference where like Trump, they brought up Epstein files and he's like, Epstein, people, why are people still talking about this guy? Who keeps bringing him up? It's like forever ago. And it's like, well, you brought him up like 6 minutes ago, but sure. It's funny when people try to implement that, if you don't like what people are saying, change the conversation, and it's very like transparent what they're doing.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's why what you need is, you know, Don Draper. Need him to market it, you know, and you see even in just him like sweet talking the Madison Square Garden people, the difference between, you know, someone like him and someone like Paul, which is that like he is able to sell them on the idea that he can sell shit to other people.
Whereas he's basically mollifying the guy. He's not, there's not really an idea there at all.
No
pitch, actually. So it's just like, I'll hold your hand, I'll get you to where you need to be so you don't care that these people, what does he say in the meeting, she's an angry woman with a big mouth or something,
right?
Like
so
you don't worry about these angry women with big mouths and you'll just make your little building and it'll be fine.
And he's able to he's able to basically sell them without having pitched a single idea. What he's selling them is that I have the ability to change the conversation. So people will not be talking about the things that it's wrong with you or it, or, you know, and all these writers, they're not going to be talking about this. They're going to be talking about something else.
Do you have Roger Sterling's Willenda's joke from that same? This is like a full belly laugh.
Yes, this is right when the Madison Square Garden people or person comes to meet with them. Roger is also there, and he has this little quip.
I understand one of our copywriters took a yet a Willenda-sized misstep. The girl, the tightrope walker. They got her off the sidewalk with a hose last week.
Just fucking so dark. And it was like such a specific reference that I had to look it up. I was like, what is this?
Oh, yeah. Flying Willendas, bro.
See, I'd never heard of this. So according to Wikipedia, Willendas, they're talking about the Flying Willendas, who their sister-in-law, Yetta, fell 50 feet to her death in 1963 after fainting during her act. And the Flying Willendas Wikipedia page is just tragedies. It's all
I mean their whole deal was like walking on tightropes without a rope, without a net. That's kind of a
more like the
Falling Willendas.
Yeah. I mean, they're flying for a little bit till that ground meets them, you know what I mean? Then they die. But yeah, It's interesting seeing what Dawn said to Peggy in that scene that I played earlier, which is like, you're not an artist, you're here to fix problems, and see how Dawn implements that throughout this episode with everything. Dawn spends the entire episode just fixing problems.
Yeah, and it's great, and I like this because you see Roger's approach, which is like, really, there's nothing to it other than like, let's just get drunk and be dudes. And like, you know, and he needs Dawn there to actually close the deal when that doesn't work.
Yeah. You know what's great in that scene, too, is the way that when he realizes the guy's going to stay there, Roger orders the iceberg wedge salads with the blue cheese. Ranch, blue cheese and the bacon. And the ad guy, the Madison Square guy, looks at him with such disdain, and I'm pretty sure like the message is, fuck this guy for knowing exactly who I am and knowing what I do want to have to eat right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you know my order?
Yeah.
Yeah. It is great. But yeah, Dawn is dealing with like problems coming, you know, at every angle from him, whether it's like this Madison Square Garden issue or his wife, you know, having some issues. He goes out to...
It's funny, like his attitude when like he fixes all of these problems, but he seems very unhappy about it the whole time. Like in the past seasons, I don't think like Dawn would get some pleasure out of solving these problems, but now it just sort of feeds his internal misanthropy.
Well, I think that the only problems that he likes solving are how to like get the client. He likes the chase, and it's why when he is able to like sweet talk Madison Square Garden people in that meeting, it's why he's so angry when Lane comes in later and says, we lost Madison Square Garden not because of them, but because our, you know, owners in the UK think there's a conflict. And he's explaining to Lane that this is like, it's not just about Madison Square Garden. It's about like 30 years of business. This is our into the World Fair. This is our into this, that, and the other. And it's kind of like the same thing with the patio stuff, where it's like it's not about the art for him. It's not about the, you know, fucking like, it's about the chasing bigger and bigger game. It's about like strategizing how to win the biggest fucking, you know.
Yes, client. But he's also another version of Peggy, where he can feel like he's become really good at his job, but without realizing that you know, at a certain point, like if you have dumb enough management, it doesn't matter that what you did is really good for the business, because they don't know what's good for the business, and they will just make dumb decisions because that's who they are, and they don't care about you.
But also, eventually, it's like, who gives a fuck about the World's Fair anymore?
Well, right. Yeah, yeah. He was wrong there. The World's Fair. Yeah, it's funny.
I mean, that was probably a pretty big deal for like another 8 years there or something.
Dude, back in the day, the World's Fair, like my dad talks about the World's Fair.
Yeah, before the internet.
He said, okay, so, and I've never Googled this. I got to see if this is real. He said he went to the World's Fair in 64. And he saw a guy pull his eyeballs out and swing them around by the stalks. That's what my
that because that's like, why is this happening? Why is this happening at a trade show?
this is my dad has told me this story countless times.
Are you sure he didn't go to the county fair?
You see, that's what it, like, part of me was like, I guess I don't know what the World's Fair is. I guess it's
I don't think it had evolved that much further than like freak shows and sideshows at that point.
Okay, probably. So it was a freak show.
I feel like it was, it probably, you know, that wasn't the pitch, but it probably was on some level because they hadn't evolved.
Right. It was like, look at the first color television and then look at guy who's going to pull his eyeballs out and swing them by the optic nerve.
Yeah.
Someone Google it. I'm not going
to
do it.
It's like conventions now where they have booth babes. It's like, yeah, we're going to like have some new product that's going to revolutionize whatever, but also there's going to be like a busty babe with the t-shirt of the company logo on it.
Yeah you're right. It's like NVIDIA, but a guy swinging his eyeballs around.
Yeah, except they're titties.
Yeah, I mean, either way. So Lane,
either way I'm looking
and you know what, so is he with them eyeballs out the stocks. Okay, so Lane is he's doing the thing throughout where he's like, you know, telling people about all the clients they're losing and stuff like that. I really love Roger at one point as they're finding out that they lost Campbell's soup. Roger just looks at the suit of armor in his office and goes, you ever get three sheets to the wind and try that thing on? I love Roger's don't give a fuck attitude is just one of my favorites.
I will say this. I've been watching the show Foundation on Apple, which stars Jared Harris, and it's this like sci-fi intergalactic space and time folding. He plays a hologram and a real version of himself, and the whole time I watched, I'm just like, what has Lane Price got himself?
yeah, what are you doing now, Lane?
Oh boy.
Jared Harris is interesting because like this is the second sci-fi show that he has been on as far as I know, because he was also in The Expanse, and I was just like, oh look, Lane is doing sci-fi, and he's doing like this weird accent the whole time. I loved him. I thought he was
he's in
great.
Chernobyl. It's like, oh man, Lane is in some hot water with the Russians now.
Yeah, man. He's just always Lane Price.
The suicide was a false flag.
It was a false flag so that he could go to space and lead a Belter rebellion. And
I feel like they're really
Chernobyl.
Yeah, they're really laying the groundwork for what eventually happens to him here, because he just seems like this sad guy that like
he has a shitty life.
Yeah, he can't win.
Yeah, because he has, you know, they say happy wife, happy life. Shitty wife, shitty life. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, because they go out to dinner, Betty and Don go out to dinner with Lane and his wife, and like his wife is just a fucking asshole. Like she says this one thing where she asks where they're living, and Lane's wife says near the UN, so there's plenty of Africans. I have no idea what kind of racism this is.
It's like too arcane for me. I'm like, is that good or
is that good? Is it because like, are you from South Africa? I don't really know.
Is it like being at the zoo where you're like, oh my god, you can like knock at them? I don't know what we're going for here.
I just don't know how racist she is, but I do know it's most likely racist. And then she also says she misses what we lost in London, we gained in insects, which is like, Jesus Christ. So Don is dealing with Betty, who has just been in a fucking shitty mood this whole time. The first scene with
also
Betty.
Insects. Didn't she say they live in the city? There's insects in the city. That many insects in the city?
I think she's talking about people.
Oh, okay.
I think she's being even more racist. But I don't know.
Bugs?
She could be just talking. I mean, New York's filled with roaches. Yeah, so he's probably talking about that's roaches. True. Betty's in a shitty mood. We finally find out why. It's because her dad, who has recently had a stroke, now Gloria, has left Gene. And Gloria, of course, was Betty's aunt and is, you know, also kind of now her stepmom. But she left.
Betty's aunt. Oh, I didn't realize that was her aunt too. I thought it was.
I thought it was. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. It was her mother's sister.
Oh, I didn't. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, and so she's worried about him, and she says, you know, her brother is gonna bring Dad over, and
this was some confusing shit to me because, like, I didn't realize that her goal was to have her dad come live with her, because in my mind I'm like, oh man, if my dad comes to live with me, I'm gonna have to get divorced.
Was that the ultimate goal though?
I guess. I mean, that's what I couldn't figure out. It seemed like it was, or maybe she was torn between, like, she didn't want to give her brother the satisfaction of thinking that he was gonna get the house and the car. And, I mean, I know that was part of it. And then they didn't want to pay for putting him in a home, I guess. Or so. Like, I couldn't figure out. Like, it was just her misplaced sense of, like, familial responsibility that she didn't want to put him in the home.
I mean, it's hard to tell.
Also, like, based on what William said, where she – and that one shot of him talking to Judy, him talking to Judy, and they're in the bunk beds, and they're like, all the toys are out, just like a beautifully staged shot.
Yeah.
But he says, like, oh, like, she always forgets that they were always fighting. Right. Like, Betty, more than anyone, or not even more than anyone on the show, but Betty is just the classic type of person that is like, revisionist history.
Yes.
Like, let's not acknowledging the way it really was and trying to, like, wrench the reality into her, like, idealized version.
She's like that's the WASP final boss in that way.
And you know, so William shows up with Grandpa Gene and his wife and kids, and it's really like, it's really sad because, you know, you see him show up. He seems fine. And then he mentions that he also got Gloria a sandwich. And, like, Betty's brother William is such a dickhead.
It was so good, though.
It was such, like, a funny joke.
Yeah. Here, he always had to deal with this guy's shit, and he's like, doesn't care anymore.
Yeah, and here's that scene.
We went to Pat's Steaks. I got you half.
Have you all already eaten?
No, we waited.
I even got Gloria chicken parmesan.
Well, great. We'll mail it to her. She's in Boca Raton. She's not coming back.
Like, his timing is so funny. And it's just so mean because, you know, he's doing the thing which I think is also, like, very WASPy, where his theory is that he's just faking it. Like, he's just playing it up. And
I kind of didn't like that, like, when he says that, because, like, the way he reacts to his dad before that is, like, a relatable thing when you're dealing with, like, a dementia addled family member, because, like, you start off, you know, trying to do, like, the most sensitive thing, and then at a certain stage of their illness you realize it kind of doesn't fucking matter because they're not going to remember it anyway. And that's felt like what he was doing there to me. And then,
well,
yeah,
and also it's like, so it's like we're just talking about how Betty's sort of like not really accepting reality and trying to change it. Gene literally is, you know, starting onset dementia, and then William is just as deluded because in that one scene he says something like, family's important to me, and then literally the next statement is, I don't want to live with the guy, or something like that. I don't want to live with my dad. Working with him is bad enough. So it's like there's just layer. Now that we're talking about it, it's like it is very WASPy. It is very WASPy to have all these layers of
self-delusion,
putting on appearances and self-delusion, and trying to turn it towards the best version of itself. And also it's like, guys, what are we arguing about? We got this free chicken parm. I want to go to Pat's Steaks so bad. I looked up Pat's Steaks.
Oh man. Oh, I want.
But then he pours all the booze out, and you're like, "Oh man, that would suck." Like, how much money worth of liquor did he pour down the drain?
That's sort of the punchline of this entire storyline to me is the fact that like Don, he's 100% takes charge of this whole thing after Betty like won't shut up, and like he's
sick of these fucking wasps, like,
yes,
you know, self-denying to the point where they can't even talk to each other anymore,
right? Exactly. And he's just like, you know, fuck it, you know, he'll live here, you know, how bad could it be? And for him, there's 1,000 other things that could have happened for the how bad could it be.
Yeah,
but him pouring out the booze.
Yeah,
because he hears a siren in the distance, wakes up, thinks it's Prohibition era, and starts draining it down the drain. He's like, the heat is on. Like, Don's face is like, oh hell no.
yeah
it is so funny.
Well, that was funny because like during that whole sequence for me, I'm like, does Don not realize what it's going to be like living with a like dementia-addled old man? Because fuck, that is not going
to
be fun.
Well, and he's just trying to like, he's just looking for a win too, because he just had the firing blanks with the Madison Square Garden thing. So it's like, all right, here's what's going to happen. We're going to do this. This is going to make my wife happy, and I'm not ever here anyway. And then it's like, well, damn. Even when I am here, I'm not going to have something to drink now.
Yeah. It sucks for him. And I love his attitude is, as soon as he gets home, because he's just, you know, lost, I think, the Madison Square Garden thing, he's already just like, oh, fuck. And then he comes home to William is just plunging the sink.
I like that they never explained that. They're just like, yeah, we clogged the sink.
And whatever. He's like, don't worry about it. It's taken care of. And then Betty is like, oh, I'm a horrible daughter. Oh, I deserve to die. And so finally he's like, oh, fuck it. He has the conversation and he tells him how it's going to be. He says, you know, he's going to live here and fucking, you know, you guys are going to pay for everything. And insult to injury, goes, also, you're taking the train home, motherfuckers. You're not getting the Lincoln. And I love that. I love that he's a take charge kind of guy, you know?
Well, I also like that there. He's like, yeah, look, he's dementia addled. He needs round the clock care. And God damn it, he's going to need to be able to drive an automobile so that he doesn't annoy me too much.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So that he can just kind of wander. And then the final scenes in this happen at Field Day and after. So Field Day. All of the families watches their children do some sort of pagan maypole dance, with a hot teacher who is, you know, there, it's like a renewal of springtime, and she is there. It's very German coded, whatever it is. It's, it means like a hot young woman barefoot, in the grass. And
yeah, they're going to do some midsummer type shit.
Yeah. Don starts watching the teacher and realizing that he wants to do fucky sucky, and he just starts like finger fucking the grass.
No, he's doing literal touch grass.
Yeah. Oh shit.
This whole episode, he needed to touch grass and he finally got the chance.
He needed to fuck grass.
Yeah. Exactly. Fucking Saltburn style. but yeah, he's like looking at her feet, and he's like touching the grass, and he's like, this grass is the same grass that has touched those tootsies. Oh, lummy, lummy, lum. And he's like super horny and stuff. And it is. It's just an interesting like human moment with him where he's been dealing with all these problems. He's taken charge in every single situation in this episode. He's just been a fixer. And finally, he's like, you know, sitting watching this hot girl, and he's just like, you know, I miss the simple times when I was just cheating on my wife a lot. You know, like, and it's kind of it's kind of beautiful because, like, for him, he's like, oh man, I really need to take a break and have an affair.
Education is so important.
Exactly. And then final scene, Don comes back in the office, looks for Peggy, or looks at Peggy, who is working, and then she wants to talk about Pampers, and then you see them in the office. He's lighting up a cigarette, she's looking through a file, and then cut to black. And that's the episode.
And he's like, finally, the one relationship in my life that makes sense.
Yeah.
Me and Peggy.
Yeah, me and Peggy. Just me smoking while she nervously, you know, flips through some pages and tries to do shitty art. Favorite scene, least favorite scene, or something we didn't talk about? Vince?
I was actually just looking at my notes, and I had written down "cut it out." I know that was somebody's line at some point, but I'm like trying. I feel like that was a laugh line at some point, but now I'm like not remembering.
Oh, you.
It's when Don yells to the kids, right?
Yes, yes.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he comes in the room. It was just like that 60s parenting moment where now it's like we have to be so sensitive and like, you know, talk to our kids and like inside voices and say please and thank you and be really polite. And he hears the kids in the other room and he just opens the door and he's like, cut it out! And closes the door. And
that's the end of it. That was great.
Betty had a line too like that where it's just like, what are you doing?
Yes, and that was the button of the scene. That's why I love that so much, where it's just they have like the serious, thematically relevant conversation, and then she's just like, what are you doing? And then cut to the next scene. It's good.
That was great. Alan, favorite scene or least favorite scene or something we didn't talk about?
I'll say two things that I caught watching this that I never noticed before. So after the scene where Paul is doing the sort of run through of the headlines, and this is he mentions the rape on 34th Street. Right after that is when we see Joan, Betty's in the office. Betty's pregnant. Joan's there for a minute, and they're talking about. Joan's like, "Oh, you're pregnant," and then I think Betty says something along the lines of like, when are you going to do all this, blah, 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 something
right,
like that.
Yeah.
And she says, Greg says that when he's on leave or whatever, that I better watch out, which is just like such a chilling, like not, I mean, and I don't know if they knew where it was going.
Oh,
but
that
is such a like layered thing. And then the other thing.
Well, he's already like raped her at this point.
Oh, that already happened.
So
it's a nod to, I didn't know in the timeline if that had happened or not.
Right.
Okay. So that clearly is a nod to that.
Yeah.
And then there's also, so I just kind of realized, okay, Roger is now with Jane. He had an affair with Joan, and Mona intentionally calls her June.
Oh.
And so it's like Mona kind of like merged Joan and Jane into one.
Oh, that's
one
crazy.
Person when,
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I didn't notice that at all, but that is incredible. Yeah. Yeah. For me, like the one thing we didn't talk about is kind of Roger's storyline here, because you get more of it later, but it's like he's mad because Margaret, his daughter, doesn't want his new wife to come to the wedding. And like he says to Dawn later, is just like, you know, I don't even really care. I just want to win. he just wants to destroy his now ex-wife. Is so funny. Yeah. And if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, you know what? I think I'm going to give it a B+. Vince, what do you give this episode? You had to give it a letter grade.
Ooh, tough. You know, I'm tabulating. This episode's kind of a downer for me. Didn't really like it. But very thematically appropriate and streamlined, furthers all the Mad Men's signature themes. I'm gonna have to go with this is tough. I'm gonna say a solid B+.
Okay. Thank you. Wow, surprising. And Alan Strickland Williams, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
I think because of the line from Don about patio, everyone wants a drink that sounds like a floor. Gotta give it a B+.
All right. You know what? That is solid B+s all around for this episode. And you know what? A solid A+ episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Alan Strickland Williams, thank you so much for coming on and talking Mad Men with us.
Thanks for having me. So fun. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Where can people find you?
You can find me at Alan Strickland Williams on Instagram. AlanStricklandWilliams.com has all my shit. My special, my album. I've got a podcast. I use a not great Bob drop every once in a while.
Hell yeah.
Called Finding My Audience. It's all there for you guys.
Yeah, so we will put it all in the show notes, so please check it out, and please, as soon as you can, buy yourself a copy of Ran Through. It's available on vinyl and digital by comedian Alan Strickland.
Named it after your mom.
Fuck you! Alan, thank you so much for coming out.
Thanks, y'all.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken, 60s
Patreon.com/Fraudcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. That's right. You get a prep school name. Mm. And if I can do it, I'll some sort of ad slogan.
You can do it. I believe in you.
I might be able to. Sorry, I burped. Vince, we have four names this week. And surprise, surprise, they are all men.
I'm putting on my giant Johnny Carson turban to
It's
my prep school giving hat.
Yeah, what is it? Zoltan? Is that his?
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay, so here they are. First is Chris Quigley.
Chris Quigley. We're going to call this guy Selick because he is Quigley down under.
Oh, yeah. Fucking. Okay, hold on. Selick?
Yep.
Okay, let's do Selick. I just medic. All right, next one. I'm sorry.
Wow.
That one is particularly hard. I think everyone listening will agree. Mm-hmm. So next one is Matt Phillips.
We're going to call this guy Papa because he's in the Phillips family. The mamas and the papas, they're having sex with their children.
That's right.
A papa.
Yes, that's right, because he is not just California dreaming, but he's also California creaming. Criminal. California criminal.
I like it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we're getting better. Now we're cooking with cream. And the third name is William Irvine.
Irvine. We're going to call this guy IKEA after the famous landmark of Irvine, California, which is the IKEA. I think that's true. I'm going to go with it.
Oh, man. Someone must have put some sugar on them because they call them Swedish meatballs.
I like that we both lose our minds during this
sweet
segment.
Sweet-ish meatballs.
I don't actually 100% know that there's a IKEA in Irvine, but it seems like when I think of a place that would have an IKEA, it's Irvine.
Yeah. Irvine does seem like a place that, it definitely
like they'd have
does.
Like three IKEAs.
For sure somewhere in Orange County, but that's obvious. But Irvine, yeah.
Like the most historic building in Irvine is the IKEA.
Yeah, it's like the original IKEA. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And finally, last but not least, Adam Edgecomb.
Oh, we're going to call this guy Goon because he's always edging and not combing.
Oh, yeah. You know.
That's what gooning is, right? I don't remember.
Yeah. It's like edging. It's like edging. But it's like a long masturbation session. But I think you can come more than once. I don't know. Let us know in the comment section if you can come more than once during gooning or if it's all edging. We call this guy Goon. That's all, folks. Loony Goons.
I was wondering where you... I was like, wait. Is that Porky Pig?
Bibbidi-bibbidi-bibbidi.
Bibbidi-bobbidi-boo?
That's my balls, folks. Loony Goons. And that is... that's your shout-outs for this week. You, too, can watch us suffer by becoming a Patreon member at the $8 tier. That's patreon.com/fraudcast. Because not only do you get your shout out, but also anyone $5 and above gets a bonus episode every week. It's me and Vince and Brendan doing the fraudcast, talking about stuff. Fraudcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all.
Grandpa Gene had a stroke and then tried to molest me. And now my brother's taking him back to my house to figure shit out. My daddy's back and he's coming with my brother.
Halo, Halo, my daddy's back.
He bought a sandwich for my absentee stepmother.
Halo, Halo, my daddy's back.
My brother Will wants the house and the Lincoln.
Halo, Halo, my daddy's back.
Grandpa Gene is showing some dementia symptoms.
Halo,
man, this
Halo,
took too long.
Having trouble thinking, and he thinks it's prohibition.
Will wants us to put him in a nursing home.
Halo,
yeah, bitch, suck your dick, eating butts. But Betty said, 'cause Gene will be alone.
Halo, Halo,
fucky sucky. So Don tells William the way it's gonna be. Take your wife and kids and leave.
Halo, Halo,
hey, he's moving to our home. Hope he don't have another stroke. Well, Grandpa Gene will be back in my life. Whoa, yeah, bitch. It feel good when you do. Oh, they confuse me for his dead wife. Whoa, don't molest me. My butthole's fat and it's wide and it's gaping.
Halo, Halo, my butthole's fat.
Wider every day, elasticity is fading.
Halo,
oh,
Halo,
stretch me good, bitch.
Fat. Yeah, Halo, my butthole's fat.
It's so fat now.
Halo,
you gotta stretch it with your hands
fat.
Like a goatsy
Halo,
type of thing. You can hide
fat.
Things in there
Halo,
like keys or Vince's mom's dick. You know what? Good enough. That took too long for what this was.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself Man. What's happening?
Start over.
What's happening?
I fucked it up. I was distracted, and then I fucked it
up. I could tell you were distracted. You were like, moving shit on the side of your shaking
I'm
stuff.
Now.
You
I'm
fucking
ready.
Idiot.
Fuck
okay.
you.
Oh, wow. I start crying. All right.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply in-app only.
When systems go down, when tickets pile up, and your best tech walks out the door, what does all that really cost you? At CBT Nuggets, we help IT teams stay sharp, confident, and certified with online training that's built for the real world. From cybersecurity to cloud, our expert-led courses help your team close skill gaps before they turn into business risks. Invest in your team. Go to cbtnuggets.com/solutions and unlock training that makes your team sharper and your system stronger.